It's Thursday, June 27th, 2013, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 19, Mario for the Money. Running time for this episode is 32 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games. My name is Jeremy.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Zach.
What's up, you guys? It's been like a week.
Yeah, really? I know, right?
Actually, not that long, because we recorded late last week.
Also, didn't we, like, see each other on Monday?
Nah, I thought I just saw clones. I went on an adventure to get pizza.
Yeah, I was there too.
Oh, okay.
It was a terrible pizza adventure.
That was a terrible pizza adventure. Pizza time! Come on and grab your friends. We'll all pile into a four-door sedan.
If you're ordering pizza, just make sure you click the button that says delivery, not the pickup button, if you want them to actually deliver the pizza to your house.
This is one of the flaws I took at character creation. Can't get pizzas delivered to other people's houses.
That's not that bad a flaw. It's way better than no Super Nintendo.
It gives me plus 0.3 to intelligence.
Good trade-off, good trade-off.
Indeed. What did you take as your benefit for no Super Nintendo, out of curiosity?
I'm not sure.
Jeremy's got so many,
Plus 10 to collecting Batman merchandise.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
What are they called in Savage Worlds? It's...
Edges and Hindrances?
That's what it was, Hindrances.
Yeah, asthma. that one sucks pretty bad.
Your character can't sprint very far at any one time.
He cannot. Nor can he jog for extended periods of time, especially uphill.
Well, that's why we just ignore that during normal sessions, so...
Yay!
Kind of like we ignore the need for food. And water. Other basic resources. Games are wonderful abstractions in that manner.
In Star Wars, I make you buy provisions.
That is true.
Technically, you made Cody buy provisions, and then we nagged him about paying us.
Well, to be fair, if Cody hadn't bought provisions, I would have made you guys buy provisions.
Space ramen.
Well, we would have ended up spacing Cody and then buying provisions.
Why? That's a waste of good food, man.
Yeah, you could have eaten him. Humans are delicious.
Tastes like chicken pork. Porkduckin.
Pork McNuggets.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yep.
That does.
Oh, coincidentally, so this is a thing, apparently.
Pork McNuggets?
No, not pork McNuggets. In India, people don't eat a lot of beef for reasons.
They are wrong.
Mostly due to Hinduism. But the most popular burger in India is actually a potato cake burger. I forget what it's called offhand, but it's basically a local potato cake that McDonald's swiped and then stuck between two buns, and now that's their most popular menu item.
I can actually see that being good.
Yeah,
not as good as a real hamburger, but...
I'd kind of actually want to have that served here, because I think I would get that more often than I would real burgers, given how often I eat at McDonald's,
well,
which is basically never.
Then you haven't eaten a meal.
I haven't?
If you eat one of those things, you haven't eaten a meal.
Why not?
Because
I like potatoes.
Unless an animal has died to feed me, I have not eaten a meal.
You and Ed agree on this subject. But Lolly, I'm Scottish.
What if the
I need my potatoes.
That's Irish.
Well, I'm also Irish. Actually, I'm more Irish than Scottish.
What if the animal just lost his leg to feed you, but is still alive and healthy somewhere?
What's your take on lab-grown meat, out of curiosity? I don't know that I've asked everyone I know this.
Lab-grown meat?
Yeah, so, okay, say you can take a DNA sample from a cow. Cow's more or less fine, you take a sample from it, and then you start growing tissue based off of that cow's DNA. And say you could grow it in the exact same shape as a steak, except it was grown in basically a tube of glycerin. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference by eating it, except that it didn't actually come from a cow,
that
and
is,
it came from a lab.
That is morally wrong.
Yeah, so it should have been made in a tube of high fructose corn syrup instead.
Oh, yeah, my bad. Did I say glycerin? I meant glucose.
That is wrong. That is morally reprehensible and morally wrong, because then anyone who eats that is not eating a square meal.
No, they'd probably be steak-shaped.
Well, they're not eating a meal anyway, because that animal has not been harmed to feed me.
Okay, fair enough. So something must die in order to satisfy your animal lust.
Yes.
What if you kill a virgin every time you eat lab-grown meat?
Doesn't have to be a virgin human, just a virgin. What if you shoot a squirrel every time you eat a lab-grown steak? Is that acceptable?
Target practice?
Yeah. And also a meal. It's like steak and a dinner, or moving and dinner.
Dinner and a show?
Yes, that things. I'm terrible with idioms. I don't know how I grew up in this country. Although I do rather enjoy perverting idioms, so.
Yeah,
I
you
like
do.
Puns. More than my brother, it turns out.
You guys and your puns.
So you saw Man of Steel, right?
Oh, yeah, I did.
What do you think of the pun at the end?
What was the pun at the end? I can't remember.
Where Clark Kent is getting hired, and Lois Lane says...
Oh, God, yeah.
That was, like, the best part of the movie.
No, yeah, it definitely was awesome. I just
Jason the whole ride home was like, welcome to the planet. Oh.
Well, I love his little eyebrow raise at that. He's like, glad to be here. Like, thanks,
Mark.
That
is pretty bad. I've actually been told by multiple people that that movie was bad.
You know, I didn't think it was bad so much as it was just okay.
When I checked out at 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, which seems right, that said I've only read one good review and about six bad ones, including one with the headline, on my planet, the S stands for sucks, which is the best headline for a review ever. But yeah, I did not like that movie. The problem with it is I could list like 10 reasons why, but the movie lost me before any of them.
No, it was... I loved the Krypton scenes. That was freaking amazing. And then it was just kind of meh.
I feel like it was paced super poorly, and those should have been, like, when he's like, Ghost Dad! Where
yeah.
do I come from? There should have been a flashback instead of starting with that.
Well, especially since I had so many more flashbacks elucidating his past. Yeah, it was not a well-paced movie. It was, like I said, okay. It had great effects.
I hate shaky cam close-up action scenes.
Okay, yeah.
And there's, like, 50 minutes of action so close you can't tell who's who, except for Superman is bluish.
What's even worse is I watched it in 3D, which I already have trouble focusing on. So basically it was just this giant blurry explosion.
Why did you watch it in 3D?
Okay, so it was Alex's sister's birthday. We went out for a movie immediately afterwards at her brother's behest. And he's like, hey, let's go watch Man of Steel. We should really go watch Man of Steel. Let's go watch it. And we're all like, okay, well, goddammit, we'll go watch it. And the only one that they had at a showing that was before 10 o'clock was the 3D one.
I was actually told the action was easier to parse in 3D. I only saw it in 2D. I did end up seeing it twice, though.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a bunch of people punching each other. There was one awesome scene that I wish pretty much everything else was filmed like it, where one of the Zod's Kryptonians was, like, basically hyper-dashing between people.
Yeah, that
looked
was
awesome.
Pretty cool.
But they didn't do that effect anywhere else in the movie, and I really...
And they didn't do it to Superman. If Superman had been doing that back, that would have been really cool. Like, Dragon Ball Z, they're all...
He did that, like, for a second in the air to Zod, who was, like, punching him and then racing after him, and like, Tenkaichi style.
Yeah.
But, nah, it was okay. It was a movie. It was the best Superman movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, that's because Superman is the blandest character on the face of
WRONG! I don't think Superman's the blandest character so much as he's the most poorly written character. He's poorly handled by a large number of people.
Yeah.
And well handled by some people. I think it really just depends who he happens to have the right, or who happens to have the rings. His character conflict is, I'm God, what should I do with that?
Which is pretty interesting, and he is,
Boo-hoo.
You know, he's the ultimate refutation of absolute power corrupts absolutely, and he's worth existing just for that.
Indeed. Well, that's something that's...
Because he refutes the something like that?
Yeah.
I didn't hear Jeremy too yeah,
he refutes
too
well absolute after. Power corrupts absolutely. And as a character construct, he is worth existing just for that.
Good old
because
Kansas
we all recognize comic book characters to refute history.
Historically, there are powerful rulers who are not corrupt. There's Charlemagne.
Indeed, there have...
Which we only have people who were writing about Charlemagne and Charlemagne's times word for that.
Okay, modern example. A dictator took over Indonesia. For the first 20 years of his reign, Indonesia was the most prosperous country in the Southeast Asian area because he was a benevolent dictator. Then he was deposed, killed, and some other asshole took over. Now everyone loves him, even though he's a despotic douchebag. I would say that absolute power doesn't necessarily corrupt. It's more that the people who want power are already dicks.
You're just too cynical for Superman.
I will stand by my statement.
How about Invincible? Invincible isn't an asshole.
Invincible is so good. But Invincible is, what if Superman was Spider-Man? I'll read that. I'll read that every day. Batman Beyond was, what if Spider-Man was Batman in the future? And that was amazing.
That is true. Batman Beyond was awesome. I'm kind of sad that show didn't last very long.
Well, the only reason it didn't last longer was they got the green light to do Justice League. And like, yeah, let's do that for a while. And they were too busy to do more Batman Beyond.
Fair enough. Poor McGinnis.
McGinnis! That is a terrible video game, though. Batman Beyond on the N64.
I don't...
It's a fighting game with one character, no versus mode, and you can beat the campaign on hard in 15 minutes.
How did this become a game? How do they publish that?
Science.
I think our exercise here has proven that quality is no bar to a game being released.
Indeed. Well, it's mostly rip-off franchise games tend to be really terrible because they're just trying to make a quick buck. I've played very few movie tie-in games that are actually good, although I feel like there may have been one of them.
There are a couple. Old video game tie-ins are better than new ones. Like the old Ninja Turtles games.
Shaq Fu.
Older than that. The Super Nintendo is where they start to decline.
Okay.
And you get Street Fighter the movie, the game.
Wait, what? Was that a thing?
Yeah, and they were all FMV characters. Like, they took... Yeah, the graphics were all videos of...
Electromagnetism.
Yeah, terrible. But, you know, the DuckTales game that's getting remade, the Chip and Dale game, the Ninja Turtles game, the NES Batman games.
There were NES Batman games?
Yeah.
I don't think I remember any of them.
There have been Batman games since Batman has existed.
That's not true. There weren't video games since when Batman was created.
No, he just
said games.
There was a Batman board game. There was an Adam West board game.
That's okay. Actually, I wonder if there are old Batman games, like from the 30s now. That
there
would
might
be awesome.
Oh no, this is a question for the internet.
Well, if only a small percentage of people who bought Batman comics loved Batman as much as you seem to, my guess is yes, there are Batman games from the 30s.
So yes.
Although, Batman was terrible from like 1945 until Adam West.
So 1945 till what's today?
No, until Adam West played him. He's not doing that anymore.
Well, no, like, Adam West was an improvement over Batman immediately before Adam West, which is something people forget because of how cheesy it is.
Quick, Batman, get me the bat shark repellent.
But it's better than Batman fighting plant aliens with Kung Fu.
That's not that bad. Wait, who has Kung Fu? Batman or the plant aliens?
Both.
Okay. I feel like comic book premises should be ridiculous, but that might be pushing it.
I prefer a more realistic Batman. But I still prefer a Batman that hangs out with a god on the weekends.
Huh.
So.
What?
I just noticed something strange. I regard most comics with the kind of air of I don't want to be asked because of lack of suspension of disbelief. But then I spend a lot of my time watching anime, which has about the same amount of suspension of disbelief.
You know, I think it actually kind of depends on medium. I know a lot of sci-fi... or guys who watch sci-fi and are into it, but always pick apart sci-fi movies, but then read fantasy and don't question it at all. So, I really think that it depends on the medium. Like anime where people are throwing giant laser beams around? Yeah, I'm cool with that. Comic books? Oh, that's a little far-fetched.
So, well, see, and my favorite anime is One Piece, which is basically a Silver Age comic book.
Yeah, One Piece does sound awesome. If only because of all the ridiculous shenanigans that occur.
It's basically a tabletop role-playing game with 9 characters.
Nah, see, it makes too much sense.
Full of munchkins.
Yeah, like, Usopp and Nami aren't munchkins.
That is true.
Brook isn't really a munchkin.
I have no idea who that is.
He's a skeleton with a sword that shoots ice. Also, he's their bard.
What? What even?
he ate the...
That sounds useful. He can't be a bard, then.
The most useful bard is not a bard at all.
He was a pirate 50 years ago, and he ate a devil fruit that let him come back to life once. But he like, his soul detached from his body, and by the time he found his body again, it was a skeleton.
He was like, well, better late than never.
Yeah. And he was a swordsman. And because he's dead, he has power. He can summon the cold from Hades.
That doesn't make any sense, but
okay.
As part
of his swordsmanship. And he's light enough that he can run on water.
Can you imagine what these character sheets would look like?
Also, he heals when he drinks milk because it has calcium, and he's all bones.
Character sheet, Tyler?
He's immune to tear gas because he has no eyes.
It'd be like watching one of Cody show up to a Deadlands game with all of his spares.
Except they're all combined because they all have so many ridiculous things.
Exactly.
So, speaking of anime comes from Japan, and so do JRPGs.
Yep.
Ugh.
Which are well known for their turn-based combat.
Partially. There are actually a decent number of JRPGs made in America. Oh, speaking of which, what the hell is this called? Tower of Pandora or something to that effect? It's like a cross between Zelda and Shadow of the Colossus and a generic JRPG.
This sounds amazing.
They're all pretty generic.
Shadow of the Colossus?
6?
No, JRPGs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're all pretty much the same thing.
Final Fantasy 6 and 7 really aren't, but those are probably the standouts of the series.
quite. 4 is pretty generic, but it's still pretty good. I'm trying to think if there's really anything. I guess 10's kind of like this awkward.
10's fairly generic as well.
Yeah, but I haven't ever seen anything with quite the same aesthetic of like biopunk pastness.
Yeah, it's got a real interesting flavor to it. Like the religion versus technology aspects they've got going on. Well, it's sort of generic, but it's not like generic fantasy. They don't have elves or dwarves.
It's kind of like Final Fantasy VII got nuked, and then people rebuilt, and that became Final Fantasy X.
I wasn't referring to, like, the genre was generic, just the usual feel is the same as the other ones I've ever played.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that is Square dominates the market, and they or tend they to make have. The same games.
They did. I mean, I don't know if they still do at this point. I don't pay a lot of attention to JRPGs.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 15 was announced, and my thing was like, wait, oh, yeah, I guess 15. Yeah, I guess. Huh.
What's 14?
It was a terrible, terrible, terrible MMO.
Oh, is that the one that they issued a public apology for?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
And then they pulled it off the air and fixed it. That's what I heard.
Yeah, they took it down, fixed it, and put it back up. And I heard it was better, but no one plays it still.
Fair enough.
Well, when you start from a situation where you have to apologize for how your game is, you really gotta. No one's gonna come back to it unless they are a diehard fan.
And Final Fantasy diehard fans went extinct somewhere around Final Fantasy 12. People argue, some people say 8 was the worst, some people say 10, some people say 9, some people will go to 12. But at some place, they messed up and lost everyone.
7, I think, was the beginning of the downfall. 8 was horrible. My God.
But I love 10. 10 is still one of my favorite games of all time.
I attempted to watch 13. I mean, play.
10's pretty good. I actually really like it. But, you know, I went back and played 6, and there's like this huge dichotomy where the characters are way super. It's like way more character-driven in the newer games and way less character-driven in the older games. Like, each of the characters in 6 gets, like, 5 lines of dialogue in the entire game. I guess you do have 14 characters that you need to split that through, but still.
Well, then why couldn't you have cropped them down a little bit so you only have, you know, a core party of 5 or 6 guys, each with a fully-fledged personality that you are willing to invest in?
If game is more important and you have 14 cool gameplay ideas for characters, which way do you go?
Yeah, they are all unique, and that's something that I think they also lost later, is that every single character in 6 plays differently. They all fill specific niches, and they do get their personality across in their 5 lines, but I agree, I think they could have pared it down. I think part of the thing they were going for is like, look at all these people from disparate backgrounds banding together to fight the evil empire. Yay!
Problem is, unless you characterize them, it's nice to be told they're all from disparate backgrounds working together to fight the evil empire, but telling somebody that they're working together and from different backgrounds and showing them characters actually doing that are two very different things.
Well, you do get a decent amount of backstory for the important ones, but there's like Shadow, whose backstory is only revealed when you sleep at an inn randomly.
Yeah, but Shadow is the optional character you have to pay a bunch of money to get because he's a mercenary.
Indeed.
And I feel like Tyler's exaggerating a bit, because it's been years since I played 6 and I didn't finish it, but I feel like every character, when they were introduced, had a pretty long arc.
Yeah, by long, it's like maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Well, yeah, but I feel like you have to go do something with them.
Yeah, essentially. You are forced to use all the characters at some point, and they use that as their time to characterize them. They don't actually do a whole lot. In fact, I think one of the most poignant I remember from way back when was Cyan, as you were wandering back through the castle he came from. He's having flashbacks to his dead wife and child, and his lost kingdom and liege, and I went and played it again, and it's like 2 lines of dialogue, and there's really not a whole lot going on. Still
yeah,
very
but
sad.
Yeah, but you remember it. It had an impact. That's what's important, right?
That is true. Now, and each of them are distinct. It's just, I feel like they could have done better striking a balance somewhere between way character-driven and slightly character-driven.
I was gonna say, you know, recall the characters you see in a lot of modern games. Of course, this is me, and I've played a bunch of these more recently, like the Mass Effect series. People got attached to those characters. They stick around, because they're all pretty different.
That's because they're well-written.
Yeah, they're well done.
Mass Effect 2 in particular is entirely a character-driven game. I get mad when the plot interrupts me going and hanging out with my bros, because the plot is stupid and my bros are awesome.
Well, yeah, the plot, especially going into 3, is kind of stupid. But all the characters, there's a bunch of them. There's like 10 or 12 of them, I think, in that game. But they're all different, and they all feel different from one another.
But keep in mind, in 3, they have the advantage of they've had 2 games to set all those characters up.
Assuming that you played the previous 2 games. I don't know why you wouldn't have, but...
But 3 only has 2 of the characters that have been with you the entire time through.
Well, yeah, but they've got a bunch of them from the first game.
2 of them come back from the first game, you can get, but the other 2...
And do you care about McMissile's gay Hispanic guy? What's his name?
Huh? The shuttle pilot?
No, like or Vasquez what? Or... I don't remember his name.
The
new guy.
The new, like party
super
member?
Muscle-bound guy.
Oh, do you give Vega?
Do you care about him at all?
No, because there's, like, one conversation with him in which he is kind of characterized, but it isn't nearly to the same level as talking to, like, Garrus in the first game, because
yes.
He has that long conversation, or Rex.
See, that's my
but
point.
It's like,
you have these two prior games to establish these characters.
Well,
the new ones suck.
They established Garrus, you know, your entire party in the first game really, really well within one game. They did not for Vega. There's one conversation with him. Once you have it, you really can't talk to him again. So they could have done it. They proved they could do it. They just didn't.
Yeah, I felt like they didn't really know what they were doing with the end of, or with the series by the end.
I think they went, they got to the point where it's like, oh, how do we solve the epic problem?
Plot holes.
With infantry.
Yeah, land on one of the Reapers, you take control of them, and then overwrite everyone's code. I could have come up with a better
ending.
See, that's my problem with Superman. Let's turn the ship that's literally the symbol of hope for this race into a bomb that will suck in all the bad guys, so we're fine.
Is that what he does?
Yes,
yeah.
It's stupid!
Yeah, pretty much.
And then Zod is fine because reasons, so they fight.
That sounds like a, D&D group's plan.
It pretty much is.
And it's a Superman movie where millions of people die because Superman's on the other side of the world fighting a pointless robot while everyone is blowing up. God, that's a dumb movie. Moving on.
So, would you say that Superman missed his turn
no,
when he was fighting
he's like,
the robots?
I've got to go over there. You guys go on a bombing run. Miss Lane, be sure you're on the bomber, because reasons.
So, ostensibly, we're talking about JRPGs and stuff.
Which is where the segue
speaking
just,
of
you know, hit
things,
the rock and fell over.
And then
speaking of stupid things, Zach, you don't like turn-based combat.
I'm not sure if you're calling me stupid or turn-based combat stupid, so
both.
I'm going to go with the...
It's a single entendre.
It's an audio podcast, Zach.
I know, which is why I can get away with that. No, turn-based combat is silly for a variety of reasons. Number one... Characters are not going to stand there in even lines and take it in turns to whack each other.
But they will die if you jump on their head. Everyone knows that. Also, if you get shot 20 times and then hide behind a rock for 5 minutes, totally fine.
Hey,
not even
hey,
a worry.
Do not doubt the healing power of hiding behind a rock sucking your thumb. The reason turn-based combat is silly is because it takes you, in large part, it will take you out of a game. Because you're doing, you know, you're standing interaction, moving around, and then you hit combat and it is, wait your damn turn before you can do anything.
Well, I was thinking about this, actually, this is one of the reasons I love the Star Ocean series and the Tales series, is because combat is not just stand around and wait, your entire party coordinates with each other to beat to death a random bumblebee. Why they're fighting a random bumblebee, I do not know.
Oh, random encounters are an entirely different rant.
Indeed. Which is why Chrono Trigger doesn't have them.
Or Mario RPG, for that matter. Or
indeed.
Earthbound.
But, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and the level of abstraction necessary in video games, and I think it really affects your overall aesthetic. And like you said, when you're walking around and interacting with the environment in real time, and then all of a sudden you have to wait your damn turn, it really throws you off course. I feel like turn-based combat is a hangover from when that's all we could do. And now, we can do better than that, but there's still a demand from people. I occasionally like them, but someone's still making them, and I don't really know why other than that it's really cheap.
Well, note the Final Fantasy series, probably the best-known series for turn-based combat, has tried to get away from it for the last, like, 5 games.
Yeah, but they went away from it in Watch These Pretty They really just want to make
movies.
They went
a bad direction, I won't argue that.
They didn't necessarily go away from turn-based combat, because even 13 is still technically a turn-based combat. They went away from, now you don't get to play the game anymore.
Well, like I said, there's Tales and Star Ocean. It's choose a target and then line up this immaculate string of combos and beat your enemy to death. And it's fun. I really enjoy the combat in that because it's not turn-based. It's real time. That's one of the reasons I like Kingdom Hearts. It's a fairly story-driven, pretty decent RPG that also has real-time action. And your enemies, like, exist in a 3D plane, and you can, like, interact with them and stuff.
See, I kind of class this a little bit. Because turn-based combat, there are a couple of ways people do this. Because you have what I refer to as hidden turn-based combat, which appears to be real-time.
Like WoW.
Like WoW or KOTOR. Because KOTOR, you have your initiative rolls effective because it's working on D20. So yep. Each character has their initiative when they go in order, but it's always active. So it appears as though it is real-time.
I really prefer not that. I really prefer hard turns. Because when I'm playing a turn-based combat game, I like the slowness. That's part of the appeal to me. I like being able to sort of focus on something else while I'm playing them.
Well, it becomes a strategy at that one point, and Zach plays a lot of tactical turn-based games.
Well, yes. Tactical, as you point out off the mics, tactical a lot different, because those are a lot more complicated, usually with a lot more guys on the field than this one little chunk. I think my biggest problem with standard turn-based, one of my biggest problems with them, there's a lot of them, is the fact that you're wandering around this overworld, and then you do screen wipe, and combat happens in its own little world. A lot of these other ones, like the KOTOR example I used, when you engage somebody, you don't screen wipe and then go to this hypothetical nether realm where combat actually is allowed to take place. The fact that you have, you know, you add in the, you know, whenever your characters go, they get to go is entirely different. I actually didn't, that's one of the things I actually kind of liked about Final Fantasy X. Never beat the game because we explained Blitzball. But the fact that you can look over on the side and see they have the active turn-based combat system, which I think is a better way to do that, because if you use this massive powerful spell, yeah, it's a massive powerful spell, but look how long it's going to take your character to come back up.
I love that about Final Fantasy X so much. Why doesn't every game do that?
Have you ever played with one of Square's active time battle systems?
I hate those, and yes he has, because Final Fantasy X 2 is one of those.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I actually really like those.
I don't remember that too well.
You have a bar that fills up, and when the bar gets full, that's when your turn goes. And then you can set it so that the bars continue to fill while you're going, or you can set it so that they stop, so you have time to think. I really hate them.
That's interesting, but I don't know that I care for that kind of hybrid. I did beat the game, and I had a lot of fun with it. But the straight-up combat, if you're going to go one way or the other, because when you're playing turn-based combat, usually you want that element of time to think, because you're weighing resource expenditure against hypothetical gain. And that is one benefit turn-based combat has, because it tends to be a little slower. But if you have that other thing going and you're constantly feeling pressure, I mean, that's not what you're playing the game for. Now, granted, I would probably not play a lot of these without somebody telling me to, because that's just not my personality. But, like I said, I think Final Fantasy X-2 X-1 did this best. I know I'm not very well articulating this, but just, I get bored with turn-based combat because it is constantly, you engage something, then you do the same thing. Well, you know, you fall into a rhythm that is the same rhythm for an hour, and it's like, you know,
well,
I would much
like
rather do something else.
Figuring out your optimum DPS for every battle.
I don't play MMOs either.
Well, neither do I, but that's basically the same thing. My biggest problem with turn-based combat, I don't mind it so much as a mechanic, except I feel like if I'm trying to, like, do something in advance of the plot, occasionally I'll be like, goddamn, all these random encounters, I really just want to continue the plot. I don't care about fighting these flying aardvark things.
Well, as this game and Earthbound, and as you said, Chrono Trigger proved, random encounters and turn-based combat don't have to go hand in hand.
Agreed. Okay, so you said you didn't like the active time battle system. Chrono Trigger definitely has an active time battle system.
Yep.
Didn't Final Fantasy VII as well?
Yes, it did.
I think it did. I never finished VII. I got past the first disc.
I never actually got out of the first, like, explosion thing. I played a little bit. I didn't get very far, though.
It did. I feel like 8 might have, but I think I'm wrong about that, so
10 was my first, and every game should have that system. I agree with you.
Yeah, no, that's definitely if you're going to do a turn-based system, that's the way to do
that
it.
That is the pinnacle of the turn-based system. Either that or all simultaneous actions, in my opinion.
I like Earthbound a lot, too, but there's nothing super special about it.
Now, Earthbound is probably the most generic turn-based battle system, except that the encounters aren't random.
And the rolling HP is novel.
Yeah, that is actually kind of neat.
I don't really know if that really improves the game, but it's interesting.
No, it's something that I would like to see in more things, because That's actually, I remember hearing someone describe the sensation of being hit by a bullet. It's, you don't even realize it at first, and then you feel this overwhelming sensation of euphoria. And I have recently become...
And your vision starts to flash red.
And then there's
and then someone throws an Elmo mask on you, and you can't see much.
And this annoying beeping noise keeps going, doo-doo, 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 and you can't find a goddamn fairy. And
sorry, I had to derail you with that. It was too perfect.
I feel like having a pool of numbers as hit points is a good abstraction, but at some point it becomes too abstract. I actually like the rolling HP system because you can act for a while before passing out from the blow that eventually caused you to collapse.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I kind of like the damage system in Fallout 3 in New Vegas, because limbs can get damaged to the point where you can't use them anymore.
You keep mentioning this, and it sounds awesome.
Yeah, I kind of want to go buy Fallout 3 because I can get it in the cheap bin, but I don't have... a whole lot of money kicking around right now.
And it's not nearly as complex as, say, Dwarf Fortress, where all of your limbs have hidden HP values, and you can cut off someone's arm and then reanimate it with necromancy to attack.
Or isn't that the one where your dwarves don't know they're on fire?
Yeah, I don't know if they ever fix that or not. I don't think they are going to. But yeah,
that's a feature now.
Dwarves can't tell when they're on fire.
Cats hypnotize dwarves.
Yep.
I actually kind of want to play Dwarf Fortress. I remember trying a long time ago, but my computer was so terrible that I couldn't run it, which is sad because it's Dwarf Fortress.
Cats hypnotize humans too, apparently.
Well, yeah, obviously.
I mean, you see all the lolcats.
All right, so they decided to add turn-based combat to Mario, which is an interesting choice because this game came out in 1996. It's after Mario Kart, but before the Mario Party or Mario Tennis. Or all the big Mario explosion. It's after the cartoon and him being in Punch-Out. He was definitely Nintendo's mascot at this point, but he wasn't a big multi-game character.
So, Mario RPG and The Legend of the Seven Stars is this game where you can, like, hop around on furniture and stuff, all kind of Mario-style. And then there are enemies that you can encounter on a map. You go into random encounter phase, except it's not actually random.
No, you can see the enemy, and if you touch them, you enter battle.
And then it's turn-based combat. You whack an enemy whacks you. The thing that actually really drives the combat for me is the timed hits, where if you press the attack button at the right time, you either defend or do extra damage.
We should back up, because that's probably the game's main feature. It's their attempt to make turn-based games a little more active. There's a little window, both when you're being attacked and every attack you do, where if you hit usually A, it's A for regular attacks, Y for spells, you will do a little more damage. And by a little, I mean usually about double. It becomes pretty important to hit them.
Quite, and they give you a decent learning curve, decent amount of time to catch up to the learning curve.
They do, and it is an RPG. You can grind for experience if you're having trouble and overcome stuff that way. One nice thing about this game is I never felt a need to. In fact, I avoided most of the random encounters, so to speak, and was still fine when I hit a boss. Zach, you haven't said anything. What's your impressions of Super Mario RPG?
I didn't get very far in the game. I got to start. I only got the first companion, which is a freaking cloud caster thing.
You didn't actually get Geno?
No, I got to the point where he apparently is an animate toy, but I didn't get any farther than that.
Okay, well, that's about almost a quarter of the way through?
I didn't necessarily have a big problem with the thing, but the activeness of the turn-based combat with those, I know you guys are saying you like it. I did not.
Not doing it for you?
No, it felt like a lot of the enemies had strikes that did additional damage because you missed that point. And I didn't exactly have a good timing on it. If I'm playing a game in which it is turn-based, I want the whole thing to be straight, you know.
Well, you want it to be Final Fantasy X, which is, as we've said, an amazing system for turn-based.
Well, hybridizing a system never works. I have not seen a single game that had a hybrid system that actually worked well, because you are taking two things that work well individually and trying to get them to work well at the same time, and they don't.
I feel like I have a counterexample, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Same with me. I feel like that's overgeneralizing. I kind of agree with you. I prefer my turn-based combat to be entirely turn-based, but this helps a little. The last turn-based game we played, Final Fantasy, we complained about how long the combats took, because literally it took so long for it to process and for guys to go up. And this helps with that a little bit, because when you're watching the animation, you have to watch for that point where you need to hit A.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but I think it was an interesting thing to try. They were saying, okay, some people find these boring. How can we make them more interesting? Let's try this. And I think it was a good idea.
Still bored the hell out of me.
Fair enough.
Again, we talk about future games a lot. Paper Mario, I played. This is the first time I'm playing Mario RPG for more than an hour. I've Paper Mario about 4 times. That game does this way better.
Indeed. Well, and it adds variety in how you do the timed hits, which helps.
Yeah, and it flashes on screen, here's where you want to press A, which is a much better teaching tool.
Indeed. Although in Thousand Year Door, they don't actually tell you when to do it. You have to wear a badge that tells you when to do it.
Ah. Well, Thousand Year Door, if you don't know, is the second in the Paper Mario series.
I lied. Actually, they only do it if you do an extra thing after the timed hit to get more star point bonus.
Huh.
They don't tell you when to do those, but it's usually contextually obvious, but some of them are a little tricky.
So the obvious question, I think, is why would you put Super Mario in an RPG?
Because you lack creativity and have no desire to create another mascot.
Because money.
I think it was Square's idea more than Nintendo's made.
Why are you the cynical one right now?
Well, I don't...
I think that's more... Your statement is more cynical than his, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought the money thing would be a little more cynical.
Now, as much as I like Nintendo's games, I don't necessarily care about Nintendo as a company. I think they occasionally try something new, and it doesn't always work out for them. See the Wii. But the games that they produce are generally fairly high quality, and they do it fairly well. And part of the reason they use the same aesthetics between games is because it helps with brand recognition. If they made a Zelda game, but it didn't have Link in it, people would just call it the Legend of Zelda ripoff.
Well, okay, yeah. Never mind, I was thinking something else when you said that. I think in this case, though, it might have been Square saying, hey, can we use Mario for an RPG? I think it might have been Square trying to broaden their market with a very marketable character.
I think it's like you said before we started recording, it's baby's first RPG. It's not very hard, and it's light and fluffy and generally happy. I really like the aesthetic presented in this.
And baby's first RPG is what I said, but I don't mean that it's super easy. It is on the easy end, but I more meant it's super accessible. People know Mario. They're getting another Mario game. Moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas know Mario is a cool video game they can buy their kids.
And you basically don't have to know anything about how most RPGs work in order to pick this up.
And it has RPG in the title, so you know what type of game it is. So if you find you like it, you can look for other RPGs. Or if you see RPG in the future, you know, oh, hey, that's like that Mario RPG game.
Kind of. Then you'll be confused as to why it's not really the same game at all, but...
And much higher quality.
I don't think that this game was low quality.
I wasn't saying it was low quality, I just think everything that's followed it has been much... In general, much better.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I think in this line, yeah, I think Paper Mario is better than this. I've only played a little bit of Thousand Year Door, but I think it's better than this. I thought Sticker Star, while not great, was better than this. And I should play more of the Mario and Luigi games.
Yeah, they look pretty amazing, actually.
Which are the spiritual successors to this. The only thing I don't like about this game, honestly, is the graphical style, which is isometric 3D. Early 3D on the Super Nintendo doesn't look all that great, and I get confused about where stuff is sometimes, and it just doesn't look good to me at all.
I kind of like it. I think it's pretty impressive for the Super Nintendo, but...
I'll split the difference. I had no strong feelings either way.
It existed.
Yeah, put the neutral race from Futurama in there. I have no strong feelings either way.
One of the things they had to do to make an RPG, though, out of Mario was sort of flesh out the world. Because normally you have, like, ice world and fire world and underground world and pipes.
And until Super Mario World, these were in no way spatially located anywhere near each other.
But you don't really have a society other than you sort of assume that Peach has a castle. I don't think it showed up before this game, though.
Really? I feel like she's been kidnapped from the castle at least once. I could be wrong.
Well,
you mostly get letters saying, Mario, I've been kidnapped!
Yeah.
Because Noble has someone constantly kidnapping them, doesn't bother to invest in a security force.
Dude, she has a security force. They're toads. They're not super competent.
So hire someone. Hire Mario as a full-time bodyguard. I mean, hell, he's had every other job in the world.
I think he keeps declining so that he can go, like, eat Yoshi eggs for breakfast every day or something. I'm not sure what he does on his free time. I guess he has parties and plays tennis. And
goes go-karting with his arch enemy.
He's a busy dude. He can't be a bodyguard all the time. It'd be irresponsible.
But he's with... He goes playing tennis with Peach. He goes Mario Party with Peach.
Yeah, and then she gets kidnapped the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a little hungover from the Mario Party, and Bowser strikes.
Yes, so that explains it, because Bowser spiked his drink.
Yeah, canon. It makes about as much sense as the stuff they added here, which is frog people and intelligent tadpoles, and then a doll that comes to life.
To be fair, the doll that comes to life totally makes sense in the context of this game.
Well, yeah, it gets brought to life by celestial beings, basically. They have, like, a cosmology to Mario, which is kind of interesting. But I think it's interesting that there are four party members in this game, in addition to Mario. There's Mallow, a wizard who they made up, who's this little cream puff.
He comes from a race of other cream puff wizards.
Geno, who's doesn't really fit an RPG archetype that well.
He's a celestially possessed puppet who can shoot lasers.
What's his job?
Yeah, he doesn't really have one. He buffs you, but he also has attacks, and his physical damage is pretty decent.
He's like the bard, but he doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Then he's not a bard.
Yeah, well, I know. There's just nothing that is the bard that doesn't suck. I'm trying to... I guess
Red Mage?
Yeah, I was going to say he could be a Mystic Thaumaturge, but...
But those are the first two party members you get. It's not till later that you get Bowser and Peach, who are sort of a... Bowser doesn't really fit anything either, because...
No, he's a fighter.
Yeah, but he has good spells.
Does he?
Yeah, they're really MP or
FP. He's a Spellblade.
Kind of.
Out of Pathfinder.
He has the most
Omegas.
HP and does a lot of damage, but he has good spells, too. They deal status effects. Like, he's got Poison Gas that poisons everyone, and Terrorize, which does good damage, and
so he's a
them.
Ninja, is what you're saying.
Basically,
he has throwing Marios, and he can throw poison smoke bombs.
That's true. And then Peach is a healer. But it's interesting to me that you get Bowser and Peach last, and you get the ones that don't feel like Mario at all
first.
Much earlier.
To be fair, though, Bowser and Peach have never really worked with Mario. Mario always works for Peach.
Super Mario 2.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Peach is in there. That's a thing.
And they don't have a Yoshi or Toad as party members, when they could have gone that way. I mean, the first village you go to, all the villagers basically are Toads.
Yeah, and Super Mario World had been published by this point, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they could have totally had Yoshi in the role of caster because he has all the different colors from eating shells.
Yeah, that's true. In Super Mario World, he has that. I forgot about that.
So, yeah, that's actually, I don't know, because it's Square, I guess they're just like, let's inject some other stuff, and that's... Yeah.
And the villain are, like, sentient weapons that have fallen from the scars, which
the
is sort
Smithy
of
Gang! Yar! Why do they want to take over Bowser's castle? Like, what was their motivation?
I think that's just where they landed.
Banging chandeliers.
Dude, your chandeliers are awesome. They can fall through pocket dimensions much further up than they actually were.
Well, yeah, clearly. Bowser's castle has all those pocket dimensions and stuff hiding inside it.
This game doesn't really have a whole lot of Mario aesthetic to it, other than, I guess, like, the enemies are pretty Mario-y.
Some of them are. Like, you got Goombas and Koopa Troopas, but then you've got, like, floating disembodied things and, like, gravestones.
To be fair, Paper Mario has a lot of that, too. They introduce a lot of enemies that only exist in Paper Mario.
Other than the whole cynical thing Tyler mentioned about using a character for brand recognition, if you're not going to use a lot of the standard ideas for what makes up a world or a character genre type thing, why bother putting the main character of that other world in it?
Exactly what I said. Money.
Well, I feel like they did. I feel like they just said, we can't do an RPG with just this. They have Peach and Bowser, and the game starts with you going to rescue Peach from Bowser. I mean, it's got a very...
And they're
like that.
Koopa Troopa guards and everything.
Yeah, and they've got the Toads. They actually brought in a bunch of stuff from Mario 2 that is just Mario stuff now. This was the first time seeing it again, like the Sniffets.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
The what?
They're like shy guys who can shoot bullets out of their noses.
Oh.
And Birdo is a boss later on.
Is she he it?
Yeah.
I don't recall this. It has been a while since I've gotten very far in this game. I actually played it a couple years ago, but...
And they're good at adapting some of the iconography, like using mushrooms as healing items is pretty cool, but it does feel like some of it is backloaded. It's weird to me that you don't get, like I said, a Mario Party member for a while. But as Tyler said, the way you traverse the world does feel like Mario. You jump high, there's some really light platforming involved.
I really wish more, I guess, turn-based combat-oriented RPGs had a way to interact with the environment like this. Golden Sun, I don't know if you guys ever played that.
Yeah.
Was freaking amazing because of your ability to interact with the environment in different ways. Much more complicated than this, but I feel like a lot of games that employ the turn-based combat system are lacking in other areas, like being able to interact with the environment on
well,
the scale.
Well, I think going to the turn-based combat, it pretty much implies there's not really anything we're going to do outside of combat anyway, so they'd cover it up by the fact that they're about as generic as you can get.
Well, some of them tell pretty decent stories. I think turn-based combat is really easy to program from experience.
I played Lost Odyssey. Write a book, I'll read it. I ain't playing your damn 20-hour game, or no, not, no, it was like a, Lost Odyssey is like a 40 or 50-hour game.
The problem
is, write me a goddamn book.
Not everyone who plays video games read books. In fact, most people I know who play video games do not read. So, what if you really want your story told, man?
Then you don't want to play through all the turn-based combat from the random encounters. It's going to take 10 minutes on their own.
I agree.
I agree with that. Make a movie or a very long... It's weird that we don't have, like, 9-hour movie stories.
Indeed.
Not super weird, but... Well,
we do have a couple of them.
Well, yeah, like Lord of the Rings.
But that's a trilogy.
Titanic? Oh, wait, no, that wasn't 9 hours, was it?
Not nearly.
No, in fact, I think Titanic is actually shorter than one of the Lord of the Rings movies, so...
No, it wasn't shorter than the actual theatrical releases.
Oh, no, not the theatrical releases. No. Alex and I made the mistake of staying up one Saturday night, and we started watching them at, like, 7, and we went to bed at, like, 6 the next morning. It was freaking ridiculous.
It's weird that there's, like, not a video game story length for visual presentation, besides video games.
I think part of that is video games are an inherently interactive medium. I honestly think, and this may be my own personal bias because it's the medium I consume most regularly, that video games are a transcendent medium. It's a way to interact with a story that you actually get to interact with other than just consuming it passively.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the same way I really enjoy the tabletop RPGs because you get to actually interact with the story. It's not just, okay, sit down and I will tell you the story of Commander Shepard or something like that. It's, no, you actually get to play this. You get to do all that.
You even get to shape the story in a tabletop RPG.
Tyler, well, you need to play Walking Dead so much.
So I've heard.
It's all right.
So much. Like, everything you're talking about is like Walking Dead's mission statement.
Well, it's all right.
I think this is what video games excel at, because whereas a movie presents passive entertainment, it can tell a good story. You can't, however, affect the outcome of the story or feel like you have a real investment in the story personally. You can be invested in the characters and have an emotional attachment to them. You can't actually affect the outcome of the story in any way. Video games, you totally can. It may be, oh, you suck, start over, but you still actually get to interact with it.
Well, like, even in a lot of games that don't necessarily have an explicit story, take XCOM, for instance. I love that game. That game has a story more in the fact that it has a structure of a story. It is an implied story of aliens are invading. Now, how are you going to beat them? And you basically can craft your own story around that framework.
Well, I think anyone who plays game, okay, this may be me projecting, which I try not to do, but I'm going to do it here. I feel like any game that doesn't have a whole lot of story to it, players will make up a story, even if it's a really rudimentary one as they go along. They may not ever tell it to anyone, but I totally do this for basically everything.
I do the same, and I think that's why Mario is so effective. We've all kind of told our little version of the story to ourselves back when we were playing Super Mario Bros. Or Super Mario World. So we have, even though we know that's not canon, we have this attachment we've created.
My sister and I played a lot of Super Smash Melee, and she would, like, go and just, like, you know, set it on infinite stock and just, like, have a little house and stuff inside of Super Smash Brothers because she was more interested in the fantastic life of Pikachu than actually playing the game. So, that's a bit of an extreme case, but...
Well, you have things... You have Machinima, too. Things like Red vs. Blue, where they've told an 11-season story...
Off of basically no characterization from these random Spartans.
Well, they gave them characterizations.
I know, exactly. That's what they did. They gave them characterizations. I mean, Master Chief is a character. All the other Spartans that ostensibly existed did not.
Except for... In Halo 4, you see some more, but most of the other ones are dead.
Well, yeah, and in Reach, yeah. All but 6 are...
But that's like random multiplayer Spartan.
That 6 has a framework of character, but it's mostly intended to be a lens.
Wait, 6?
Yeah, he's the main character of Reach.
He is the character you play as. He or she, depending on what you pick.
I missed something there, and I thought you said that there was Halo 6. I'm like, whoa, guys, slow down. We're missing a number here. Although, I guess, you know, you could just say all these other games between 4 and 6, we're going to collectively call those 5 now.
All these other games between 4 and 6.
Yeah. Was 4 a thing?
Yeah, 4 was 4? After Reach and ODST, though. There hasn't been one since 4.
Okay, never mind then. Okay, well then we're going to call
well
the things
done,
between
Tyler.
3 and 4 is actually 5.
Yeah, that's how counting works.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's how Resident Evil and Capcom number their things, right?
I don't think so.
Mega Man, was Mega Man 7?
How many Resident Evil games are out?
6?
No.
There's some for the DS.
Code Veronica, Revelations, there are quite a few others.
There's a rail shooter, there's a few other ones. There's actually like 10 or 12 Resident Evil games, and they only have 6 numbers.
Okay. So, since we're talking about games being an excellent medium for presenting narrative, I think there can be games that are good even if they have a terrible narrative or no narrative at all. Mechanics-based games are still fun to play. Take Resident Evil 4, for example. Story in that bites balls.
But the story is so bad it's good.
That story is laughable.
The story is an important part of Resi 4, I think. I think it is part of what makes that game good.
Well, yes.
It's not a good story, but at the same time, it's a great story.
You send in one guy with one pistol, no extra ammo, a can of hair gel, and no Spanish to English dictionary in Spain. And he has to rescue the president's daughter. Clearly, he is that badass.
Well, yeah, he's special ops. He doesn't need a real weapon. He's got a combat knife. Also...
And a pistol. He does start with a pistol.
Pistols. No, yeah.
It's more useful than the submachine gun.
I have yet to use a submachine gun in that game.
I used one once, and that was because I was a really bad shot at one point.
I carry a pistol just in case I needed a shotgun and a sniper rifle, and that's my layout.
I have a SMG for if I run out of ammo on the other weapons.
Well, in Resident Evil 4, you had the massive attaché case that has everything you ever need, so you can fit the submachine gun in there anyway.
I can't afford the extra large one yet, so I'm stuck with whatever the second to last size is, and I have plenty of space for ammo, but no space for
another gun. I don't know, it killed my Wii.
Oh, also a Magnum. I have a Magnum.
Magnums are sweet. All right, anything else we want to say about Mario RPG? I think it's a good game. It's a meaty game. It made a long episode. Lots to talk about.
It's mediocre.
We talked
around it mostly.
Yeah, we didn't actually talk about the game. I think it is...
We had 20 minutes on it.
It's an enjoyable game, and for only $8, it's a pretty damn good value. So.
Yeah, money for value, go for it. But as for the game, it wasn't like my favorite thing, but yeah, money for value, damn straight, yep. $8?
It's not stellar, but it's definitely a classic, and it's definitely held up fairly well.
Yeah, it's not as good as Paper Mario, but it's the best we've played in a long time.
Yeah, other than Doom. Doom held up pretty damn well.
Doom was awesome. I had a lot of fun with Doom.
I feel like Doom was a while ago, and I think I like this more than Doom, but I think that's...
That's aesthetic. You like Mario a lot.
I think I like Doom better, but I also don't get to play a lot of shooters, so...
Come over to my place.
All right.
I'll shoot you all night long.
Speaking of your place, Zach, it's your turn to choose what we're going to play next.
We're going to go with, because it's baseball season, we're going to go with Bases Loaded.
On the NES?
On the NES.
Not baseball?
No, just Bases Loaded.
Is there a game called Baseball?
Yes, it came out 3 years earlier and I owned it, but Zach hates my OCD, so he's going to make us play Bases Loaded first.
Okay, so...
Am I the only one on this podcast that doesn't claim to an OCD at one point or another?
Yeah. No, I have this weird thing where I have to, if I experience a sensation on one of my hands and I notice it, I have to replicate the same sensation on the other side.
Oh, I had that for a while. I have it more with my legs than...
Yeah, I don't have it at all with my legs. It's my hands and to some extent my face. But yeah, anyway, next time on Last Time, Bases Loaded!
So if I slap you on one side, you'll have to slap yourself on the other?
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein is copyright of its respective owners. That may not be obvious.
You can contact us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. And if you want to contact one of us individually, I am Zach@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Or Jeremy, GEREMY@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
You can visit our show page, if you don't want to hit the blog, at gplus.2/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you do want to visit the blog, lasttimeonvideogames.com.
And we've got an RSS feed. Probably click on it, or one of the other buttons on there.
We're also on iTunes.
And the Twitters.
Twitter is @LTOVG.
Unlike all the games we play on this show, we cannot be emulated.